This is the Gas House Gang on 104.1 FM KMOX. Sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling, a Daikin Comfort dealer. And by Anderson Hospital, a Newsweek World's Best Hospital. Now, the Gas House Gang on KMOX.
Good to have you with us this afternoon. Till 1 o'clock, it is the Gas House Gang. Mike Claiborne, Matt Pauly, Chris Ranji. We're going to talk to John Rooney at 12:30. He's with us every Friday at 12:30. Also, we are going to talk to Howard Richard. That's going to be at 12:45. So we've got Rooney. We have Richards. It's going to be a fun next hour. 314-436-7900. Let's hear from you as well. If you want to text in or call, you can watch us on Facebook, YouTube, or Twitter. Find the at KMOX sports account and follow us there. All right, guys, this is not my favorite time of the year. It is when the Cardinals are getting ready for the postseason. And, of course, a miracle could happen. I understand that. But this is very likely the last series of the season for the Cardinals, and it's happening against the Brewers. So instead of this being a great time of year for baseball and getting ready for all of that, it's a bit sad to think of it this way.
Yeah, it is to this point, because I thought at this time of the year, wait a minute, let me get my mic open here.
Oh. No, we're good. We okay, got you. Yeah.
You can hear me? Okay.
Yep.
It's sad because I really thought that this series would be the Cardinals would be in the playoffs and Milwaukee would be watching from the outside, because I've said this countless times. I didn't think Milwaukee was going to be this good, and they fooled me, and I think they fooled a lot of other people. And I thought the Cardinals would be better. But once they decided that they were going to stay the course and not really add anything, it came back to put us in the situation that we're in. So, you know, it's one of those things you live and you learn from it. And hopefully there's enough data that was compiled to know what you need going into next year and beyond.
Yeah, I'm really curious what it's going to look like. Katie Wu wrote a piece in The Athletic that ran today.
A very good piece, by the way.
Yeah, it was very really good. But it was talking in terms of the organization looking at this rebuild as being a three-year type project. Now, that doesn't mean that when you talk about a rebuild being a three-year project, that might be until you are competing at the highest level. That doesn't mean you can't be a playoff team and things like that during the period. But, man, I'm really curious. And as I read that today, I was thinking to myself, because she was going through basically the list of guys who did not take step forwards this year or did not exceed expectations. The guys that we were talking about in spring training needing answers on, and either the answers aren't there or the answers aren't good enough. And it just feels like it could be a really interesting next, I don't know how long, but I mean, I think there's going to be some pretty major roster turnover coming up.
And I'm good with that. You know, the other thing I would say to that, I don't think the comeback is going to take 3 years. You know, I think when you say 3 years, I think that means your minor league system is fully stocked. You're having some guys that you can draw from within. But, you know, if you add a couple of pieces here and there, you can get healthy quick in this division. And I think that that's another way to look at it. And that doesn't mean you run out and spend a small fortune on free agents in the offseason. But you have some players you can move, and you may be able to get some players who are probably closer to big league ready, if not already in the big leagues, that can probably contribute from the levels that you're looking for. This team needs more slug. This team needs more swing and miss pitching. And those things are out there on the market. You just have to have the assets to be able to go out and acquire.
Yeah, it's not to cut you off, Ranj, but just one more thing. It's really interesting because in some ways it feels like this team is a million miles away, and in some ways it feels like this team is a lucky bounce here or there away. Because when you look at them as being, four or five games out of a playoff spot, you can start playing the games. Well, what would have happened if they would have dumped Fetty earlier and gone to McGreevy? What if they would have done just something small in the offseason beyond Phil Maton, brought in a starting pitcher, found a right-hand hitting outfielder or something like that? Like, it's really – what if they wouldn't have sold at the deadline? It's really easy to see those four, five, six wins that would make all the difference in the world, where we're talking about this team at least being a legitimate not being like right there in the playoff race right now, yet at the same time, when you start comparing this team against the really, really good teams in baseball, the Phillies, the Dodgers, the Yankees, whoever else you want to go in there, I kind of leave the Brewers out because the Brewers do things different than everybody else, but the rest of the really good teams, that's where it feels like this team still has a really, really they got some work to do.
You know, Matt, I would say this, and I'm kind of on the boat with you. Think about how many nights you and I sat through games where you had the tying run at the plate in the ninth inning.
Yeah.
And all you needed was one hit, and you couldn't get it. I look at those moments. The bullpen was terrific, considering that a lot of these guys were unproven. So I didn't really have a problem with that. The problem was you didn't have enough guys in the bullpen because Ollie had to continue to go to JoJo and continue to go to Riley O'Brien and Matt Swanson and Kyle Leahy. Those are his four core guys, especially after the trade deadline. But if he would have had some other guys that had that level of experience or that level of being involved in higher leverage situations, who knows where this team could have been. They could have been in the playoffs. I know that.
If they would have won that Saturday game in Milwaukee that they gave up late, and that was the night where nobody was available, they would have been three games out of a playoff spot that
night.
Yeah.
You know, and Claves, you mentioned the slug. This team is, what, fourth from the bottom in all of baseball and slugging percentage. The only teams worse, White Sox, Cleveland, Pittsburgh. So, I mean, we're talking about some of the other, you know, for the most part, teams that are struggling, though Cleveland have been competitive. It is you have to hit for power. We talked about this yesterday on Gas House Gang. If this team does not hit for power, it's really difficult, especially if your pitching isn't otherworldly. You can get away with it if you're like the Padres, for example. You can get away with not having the best slug in the world or a bunch of power on your team if you pitch lights out, but the Cardinals only really had that in the bullpen.
Yeah, you know, when you make a good point on bringing up the pitching, and the team that comes to mind is Seattle, where when you look at them offensively, when they're on the field offensively, the only guy I think that doesn't have 20 home runs might be the third base coach, because everybody else in that order can slug, and then you back it up with some very good pitching, maybe some of the best pitching we saw throughout the course of the season. That's where you're trying to get to, where you have that great balance. Now, that doesn't mean you need to have, eight guys hitting 20 home runs, but you need to have at least one more. I mean, think about it. Wilson Contreras, who's done for the year, is the only guy that Burleson may get to 20. He's at 18, so he's got a shot. But when you have just two guys who are barely touching 20 home runs, it's hard to beat a lot of teams.
Yeah.
Now, Cleveland can manufacture runs. I thought Cleveland was a very fundamentally sound team. They go from first to third. They steal bases. They know how to get a fly ball. So they didn't hit as many home runs as maybe they would like to, but they found themselves offensively relative.
And it'd be really nice if you had somebody who could go over 20. It'd be nice if you had a 30 home run hitter in there. And maybe Nolan Gorman can be that. Maybe he can't. I don't know what his future is going to be in the organization. Ivan Herrera projects as somebody who he could maybe be a 30 home run guy. But essentially, you don't want your home run leader to be a 20 home run guy unless you got like six or seven guys hitting 20 home runs.
Exactly. Exactly.
I want to talk more about the rotation. We'll do that in a minute when we come back from break. But before we get to that, Matt, you said something about the Brewers, and it's a thing that you've been talking about, man, since they had taken over the division and really went on that tear a couple of months ago and put themselves right back in the conversation. You talk about the way they do things differently. And what I'd like to know is the way they do things, is it repeatable? Or is it the sort of thing that if everybody starts to do it, then there's no advantage any longer?
Yeah, I think they have really smart people in the front office that allow players to become the best version of themselves, and they are all in and singularly focused on just doing that. And like I'm not trying to take anything away from Pat Murphy as a manager. He's obviously done a very nice job taking over for Craig Counsell. I'm not trying to take anything away from Matt Arnold, their general manager, who took over for David Stearns. But it's the machine that they have going, and they've got so many people there that are very smart. You know, I've told this story before. Like when I was in Milwaukee, Craig Counsell, he would think about something, And he would call down to the baseball baseball data department and say, "Hey, I've got an idea. Run some numbers on this." And all of a sudden, three or four guys would individuals would run all the numbers, and they'd kind of report back. It is this constant mental approach to baseball of how do we make this team the best possible version of what it can be, and it works. And I don't know the inner workings of what's going on in there, but that's where I give the credit. It's not that I'm trying to take credit away from anybody, but I give the credit to just this machine that they've got going on in the front office.
So let me ask you this, Matt, because that's an interesting concept you have. You know, they have taken some players, many players from different organizations, and all of a sudden they become, very integral parts to what they have going. So are they better at recognizing talent that's already in the league compared to them drafting players? Because if they were that good in the draft, they wouldn't have to go out and find reclamation projects.
Yeah, so, I think they're fine at developing players. But to your point, Claves, what they're really good at is going and seeing the guys in other organizations that have not reached their potential and saying, a tweak here, a tweak there, throw this pitch, don't throw this pitch, take this approach at the play. They are so good at finding deficiencies in other players. So, when you're drafting players, players aren't fully developed yet. I think the Brewers' skill is taking players who have been developed a little bit and then finishing off the job.
They are a fascinating team, man, and I don't know when that, as long as their process is right, they're going to be competitive for a very long time. And that's now, the part that's a little unnerving about it, is that the Cardinals are going to have some competition for a while.
And that's fine. I think everybody loves competition, but here's the thing that the Brewers have been in the playoffs 7 of the last 8 years, and I'm still trying to figure out what year were they in the World Series. So they have just enough to get there, but not enough to get over the hump. And now I say get to the World Series, because once you get there, you're one of two teams that has a chance to win the whole thing. So your percentages, increase dramatically. But you have to be able to get there, and that's something they haven't been able to do. So as good as they are, they still come up a little short.
NLCS in 2018 got to Game 7 against the Dodgers. That's as close as they've been in this run that they're in. They've been out in the first round a lot, and we saw it happen with the Cardinals. There was a drain of mental resources from the Cardinals when they were in their run, where all of a sudden every other organization in baseball was hiring people from the Cardinals. I think that's starting a little bit with Milwaukee, and it's going to continue to go on. So many of these things that they are doing, I think, are going to continue to be picked up by other organizations.
And Mike, what you say about them not having been to the World Series, and this is why I don't particularly like the philosophy of, hey, just build a team good enough to get into the postseason, and if you do that, anything can happen. Because anything can happen, but I don't think you want to count on anything happening to be a World Series team.
No, I agree with you. It's nice to get in the postseason. I wish we were in it.
Well, for this year, I would have taken that.
Yeah, exactly. But once you get in, you say to yourself, okay, what do we need to do in order to go on and get to the World Series? And a lot of times it comes up the fact that you just don't have enough pitching. Because how many times have we seen teams who were good all through the season pitching-wise, and all of a sudden they have a game where they have to use an opener because they don't have enough arms left. Mm-hmm. And I'm anxious to see what this season looks like, the postseason, with teams who have tried to manage their pitching. But we have guys now that may have hit that wall. And oh, by the way, there's maybe another month's worth of baseball to be played. There's a lot of innings that are still out there that somebody's going to have to pitch, and some of these guys may be out of gas. And I think that's going to be the intriguing factor on how managers manage their pitching starting when postseason gets underway.
Gashouse Gang is brought to you by Saliga Heating and Cooling, SaligaHeatingAndCooling.com. Also by Anderson Hospital. Mike Claiborne, Matt Pauly, Chris Ranji on KMOX. Gashouse Gang on KMOX, Mike Claiborne, Matt Pauly, Chris Ranji until 1. John Rooney will join us. Howard Richards joins the show at 12:45. So we're glad you're here on this Friday afternoon ahead of the Cardinals' final series of the season. 6:20 pregame show tonight, 7:15 first pitch. It's the Cardinals and Brewers at Busch. So it's the final series at Busch Stadium. They will then go on the road to play the Giants and the Cubs to finish out 2025. So when we talked to Oliver Marmol on the Gas House Gang on Tuesday, we talked about, touched on a lot of things, and one of them was the rotation and where it is now and how that's going to look for next year. And we spent some time on Kyle Leahy, who has pitched really well out of the Cardinals bullpen and has had nice multiple inning outings all year long. And Ollie talked about the possibility of building him up, giving him a foundation. Not possibility. This is what they're doing. They're giving him a foundation so that there is a possibility of him fighting for a starting job next season. Would you like the idea of Leahy potentially being in that rotation in 26?
You know, I'm open to it because there's obviously a spot available. You know, what does that look like? Does he have more? Does he have enough pitches to make himself relevant? And is he a guy that's just only going to give you five innings? You know, and obviously you come into spring training. I'm sure he's going to work on some things and try and make sure he can be as stretched out as he can. But I think you have to give this a long, hard look before you go out and start trying to find pitching elsewhere. Because within your organization, nobody in the organization in the minors is better prepared to start than he is. You think about Quinn Matthews was hurt part of the year. We saw the same thing with Tink Hentz. And all the other pitchers that are up and coming aren't close to being ready to have that big lead load yet. So I'm definitely going to take a look at him. And I think the bigger challenge, Chris and Matt, is finding someone who can replace him in the bullpen. And oh, by the way, while you find someone to replace Leahy, you better go find three or four other guys to fill out your whole bullpen instead of having four and a half guys every night.
It is easier to find guys to replace in the bullpen than it is to go find starters. And I think the other side of this is there's got to be real competition. So when you think about the starting rotation next year, assuming everybody is back, Sonny Gray, Michael McGreevy, and I think Matthew Liberatore are the three that you kind of have penciled in. For those final two spots in the rotation, I want to see four, five, six guys that are in competition. And Andre Pallante is going to be in that group, but I don't think he's done anything to guarantee himself a job next year. I'm good with Kyle Leahy being there. I'm good with Quinn Matthews being part of that competition after what he did this year. I don't think Liam Doyle's quite going to be in the mix in spring training next year, but I think at some point in the next season. You never know. You never know. That's right. So, but that's the value I see is you bring Leahy into spring as a starter, and you have the bullpen covered as if he is going to be a starter. If he doesn't make the rotation, you put him back in the bullpen, and your bullpen is that much stronger because of it. But there should be a legit open competition for one or two of those rotation spots in spring.
Well, I would go one step further, and I agree with you on the competition. I think they have to find someone who's different from what his stuff looks like. We need a swing and miss pitcher. Mm-hmm. Okay, we have guys that can trick you here and spot it there, throw the slider and a changeup. I want a guy who can rear back and turn it loose to the point where he gives the opposition a different look compared to what they see the other four times they see the Cardinal rotation.
That'd be nice. I would love to see that. I don't know what they do to make that happen, Klebs.
It's their job, not ours.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, Cardinals had the second lowest as a pitching staff, an entire pitching staff top to bottom, second lowest strikeout percentage of any other team in baseball. Only the Rockies had fewer.
We should give Sonny Gray credit for what he's done from a strikeout perspective.
Oh,
he has been more of a strikeout guy than any of us ever expected him to be when he signed with the team. But he's not a throw it 100 to get it by you. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Now his stuff is so good. His spin rate is so good. And that's what we saw when he was in Minnesota. And that was a year where he gave up just 8 home runs. And he was in second in Cy Young Award nominations. But his stuff is different than anybody else's on the staff. Now, obviously, the sweeper is one of his pitches of choice that we're seeing other guys throw. Not as effective as Sonny. But still in all, I need a guy who's touching 96, 97, and maybe if he can throw 99 consistently with control, that's the one element. When you look at these other teams, the teams that are successful, Milwaukee has a couple of guys who could get it up there. but their bullpen probably is a little bit more effective. But when you look at these other teams, they all have guys that have that mid 90, 97 range where they can show it to you. It doesn't always have to be a strike, but you have to respect it. And that's the one thing the Cardinals don't have when you look at some of their stars. Now, we've seen flashes of it. Libertor is a guy that can get to 97. Sonny's a guy that's going to be 94, 95 if he grunts, and he grunts on virtually every pitch. And then you have McGreevy, who, you know, if he's at 95, okay, yeah, that's a very good effort. But McGreevy is not a swing and miss guy as we speak. So that person who I'm thinking of would like to see, I don't know where he's at right now, but I think that should be one of the missions for the Cardinals this offseason, to find someone like that. And he's probably not in our organization. So, and maybe you want a guy with a little control, and maybe somebody who is a little raw that you may have to fix a little bit. But as long as he has a heater that's fixable, you have to roll the dice with that.
They're starting to get some of it in their organization. It's just not ready to be here yet. And that's the thing, is that the, when we're talking about that 3-year, I don't know if you want to call it a 3-year plan, but the assumption that 3 years from now they're going to be where they want to be, stuff like that's going to take time. Their draft philosophy, trying to get those hard throwing pitchers who, but to be fair, are not always available when the Cardinals pick, because those guys are a lot of times gone off the board. But
you're
clearly
right,
there was a focus on velocity for them this last draft.
So let me run this by both you guys. Liam Doyle, high round pick for the Cardinals out of Tennessee, throws reasonably hard. What happens if he walks into spring training and they give him a look, maybe a little bit of a longer look, and the next thing you know, you say, you know what, he might be ready by July. Do you forget about the clock, and do you forget about all the other things as far as his youth? Because remember, this is not an 18-year-old guy. We're talking about a guy who's finishing college. So he's in that 23-year range, which means he's more physically along than maybe somebody that's 18 or 19 that you really want to develop and really grow. So what happens if he rolls in and says, okay, he's better than what we have. So do you take him out and say, let's see what you have?
Hey, I'm thinking about it.
He's wearing the birds on the back.
I'm thinking about it.
Okay.
At minimum, thinking about it. Because there are a plenty of examples of success of guys coming out of college and almost immediately impacting. And I'm not saying he's Paul Skeens, but that's a recent one. It does happen.
Yeah.
Chris Sale, when he came out, immediate impact. In fact, the year he was drafted, he ended up pitching before the season was over, out of the bullpen. So it does happen, and it can work if you get the right guy.
Listen, when you're drafted that high in the draft, you're not on a 3-year plan as far as I'm concerned.
Right. I agree with you. Mike Claiborne, Matt Pauly. Matt, we appreciate you. We'll be listening in to the pregame show tonight and Redbird Rush Hour at 5.
Sounds good. Thanks.
Pregame show is at 6:20. 7:15 first pitch, Cardinals and Brewers. John Rooney will be on that call tonight, and John will join the Gas House Gang next on 104.1 FM KMOX.
Now, the John Rooney Conversation on KMOX, sponsored by Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance. We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and if you're a Missourian, we're for you.
Gas House Gang on 104.1 FM KMOX. Mike Claiborne and Chris Ranji. We'll have Howard Richards talking Mizzou football with us at the end of the show, 12:45. We are going to visit with him. Big game against South Carolina. But right now, we're getting ready for baseball tonight at Busch Stadium. Final series at Busch for the Cardinals this year. They will take on the Brewers. And John is with us now on KMOX. Good afternoon, John.
How are you? How's everybody today?
I think we're doing great. We wish that we were, you know, gearing up for a playoff run here, more than just talking about this being the final homestand of the season. But it's one of those things, John, it hits you when you get to this part of the year that these are probably the last three games the Cardinals will play at Busch this season.
And they wrap up against a team that is going to go ahead and put the division away. Have they put it away already? I mean, they put it away a long time ago, quite frankly. But we have the Brewers and the Cubs in from the Central Division in postseason, and they both deserve it. They've played very, very well. Had the Cardinals been able to win a little bit on the last road trip, might be challenging for a wild card spot, but that just didn't play out. So it's a matter of evaluating individual performances. I'm sure Heim Bloom has a really good idea of what direction he wants to take. when he starts shaping a roster for next year. And that's going to make for a very interesting offseason, I think, Mike.
Yeah, I agree with you, John. There's a lot of things as we've had enough time to evaluate this team, and I think we kind of know what we need. For you, who was a person or what was an area of the ball club that you were impressed with that you feel good about going into 2026?
Well, you know, I felt the bullpen back in spring training, the way it was shaping up, that that was going to be a real strength, and it was, and it certainly has been overall, even after trading the three big names that were not going to be coming back anyway, and Helsley and Maton and Matz. And I thought Matz did a terrific job, and he's been helping out the Boston Red Sox. But I think the bullpen area, and I really like Matt Svensson. I'd heard so much about him from his closing days in Springfield, and I'd heard so much about, you know, the progress that he had made at AAA, pitching in late-inning situations. Only had, I think, one save down there. But here's a guy who has pitched high-leverage innings right along with Kyle Leahy, and whether Leahy stays in that type of role or whether he goes into a starting role next year, I think he's set up to do that if that's what they'd like to see from him. And then I thought we saw pretty much what we saw at the end of the season last year out of Michael McGreevy. I thought he was our best starter in the month of September. Really impressive. And from those particular areas and those players, that's what I saw as real positives for 2025.
Yeah, you mentioned Michael McGreevy, likely part of this rotation for next season, barring some sort of, who knows what happens during the offseason, but very likely he's back. They had him on MLB Network earlier today talking to him. How much of what he did or what about his season did you like? Because he was impressive in many of his starts this year.
Well, he's a pitch maker, Chris. That's what he does. He's not an overpowering pitcher, even though I think his stuff can produce more than zero strikeouts that he had in a win at Cincinnati. I think he struck out five or six the last time out and quite capable of doing that kind of thing the way he mixes up his pitches. Doesn't rattle much at all, if any. That's something that's very impressive about him. But he is a pitcher, and I'd like to see more pitchers in Major League Baseball. You like the swing and miss stuff, the guys who can throw the ball through the wall, but a lot of those guys end up getting hurt somewhere along the line. And McGreevy, he's very careful about the way he tries to keep the ball out of the middle of the plate. He uses the corners, pitches up and down. He's a pitch maker, and that's why he's off to some really good numbers.
Yeah, I think looking at him, looking at the rotation and what it is, and the fact there's going to be a lot of turnover here going from one season to the next. Out of the rotation, John, how quickly do you think they could assemble a rotation that is competitive within the division next year?
I can't answer that, Chris, because I have no idea the moves that Heim Bloom has in mind, how he wants to use certain pieces for trades to acquire either pitching or a right-handed bat or two for the bench or for the roster. I don't know what direction they'll take, so that's very, very hard to answer how a pitching rotation will shape up. But right now you have Sonny Gray in there. You have Michael McGreevy in there. Matthew Liberatore, I think, made some big strides toward becoming an every fifth-day starter at the big league level. And we'll see what they have in mind for Andre Pallante. But let's see what they have in mind. I mean, who stays, who goes, and what they want to do with shaping up the rotation. That's a question probably better answered when we get to Jupiter in late February.
Hey, John, before we get out of here, playoffs are going to be just around the corner. You and I, Ricky Horton, have always liked Philadelphia from the time we saw them. Give me some other teams that have really caught your eye that when they get in the postseason could pose a problem for someone.
Well, in the National League, Philadelphia is the team that I'm keeping a close eye on. They have a very good mix of power. They could catch the ball a little bit better, but they do pitch it, and Aaron Nola has come on strong lately, so that's why I like Philadelphia. Atlanta certainly was a disappointment this year, but there's a team I look for a bounce back from next year. Doesn't help them for right now, but the New York Mets, it has been interesting to watch them. They have a lot better talent than what their record has been showing, but Tony La Russa said you are only as good as your record, so it is what it is. Can San Diego get enough starting pitching to complement a bullpen that has really been used a lot by Mike Schilt? That's going to be a big question. And do the Dodgers have enough pitching to complement what they have in their lineup? And are they going to be able to defend in the National League? Over in the American League, I really liked what we saw from Seattle. And really, Claves, it's who's playing well right now going down the stretch. Yeah. And Seattle is certainly one of those teams where Houston is trying to hang on, and Texas tried to make a push, but they've fallen off a little bit lately. And the Tigers, they had a huge lead that was cut into, but I see that happen a lot before teams finally get things straightened out and they line up their pitching for the postseason. And it is an entirely new season when we get past a week from Sunday, that's for sure.
Also, John, I'm sorry, Claves, I just wanted to ask him because we got to get to Howard Richards here, but Clayton Kershaw, one of the best pitchers in the history of the game, future Hall of Famer, announced he is retiring. He did that for 18 seasons, John.
Well, most players are around for about three or four on the average, and your great ones are around 18 to 20 years, especially a pitcher. If you can stay that long and work around injuries the way he has, a spectacular curveball, a good fastball, and then he did a lot of pitching late in his career coming off injuries. He's a Hall of Famer. There's no two ways about it.
All right. We appreciate you. We'll be listening to the ball game tonight. Thank you, John Rooney.
Okay, guys. Have a great one. See you later, Claves.
We'll see you soon. You got it, John.
6:20 pregame show, 7:15 first pitch, Cardinals and Brewers tonight. Big game for Mizzou tomorrow. They open up SEC play. They will take on South Carolina, and Howard Richards will join the show when we come back. It is the Gas House Gang, brought to you by Saliga Heating and Cooling, SaligaHeatingandCooling.com, and by Anderson Hospital.
Now, back to the Gas House Gang, sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling, and by Anderson Hospital on 104.1 FM, KMOX.
It is the Gas House Gang until 1 o'clock. It's Mike Claiborne and Chris Ranji trying to connect with Howard Richards, Missouri football analyst, who is expected to join the show here. It's a pretty big football weekend with our local teams. And by local, I mean the Fighting Illini, who are the 9th-ranked team in the country. And they'll be facing Indiana in Bloomington. And they are ranked. They're number 19 in the country. Meanwhile, you've got the Tigers, who are in the top 25 in both the coaches' poll and the AP poll, and they will be playing South Carolina. That game, both of those games, happening tomorrow. So Claves going to talk to Howard here in a moment, but this is a big football weekend for our teams.
It really is, and you know, when you think about getting into conference play, South Carolina has been a problem for Missouri in the past, so this will be a good test for them. And Illinois is just doing everything they thought they could do so far. They've had a couple of good wins so far, and then Indiana, there's a program you just don't hear a lot about when it comes to being ranked in football, but they've started to find some consistency. So when you get into league play, it's a whole different environment compared to the blood donors that you see on some of these school schedules. So you'll start to see a little bit more of the playbook. You'll see a few things done differently because a lot of these schools don't want to show too much too early. So I'll be anxious to see what Missouri does. Now, I'm not sure about South Carolina's quarterback. I know he had an injury.
Yep.
So if he's out, then obviously that makes it even, I think, more challenging for Missouri because they don't have enough data on who's going to be the quarterback. So you have to game plan a little bit differently.
That's right. And we do have Howard Richards joining us now on KMOX, Mizzou football analyst. Howard, good to talk to you.
Good afternoon, guys. How are you?
We're doing great. Getting ready for SEC play tomorrow.
Fantastic. I was just listening to Mike's comments about the to play. Now the backup quarterback, Mizzou saw, I think, in 2020 or 2021. So there is some familiarity with him. And now he's not Lenore Sellers, but he's an experienced quarterback and, you know, has paid his dues in and around college football. So trust me, by no means is he a slouch. His name's Luke Doty. He's not a slouch at all. He can make plays.
You know, Howard, it's funny. You just talked about a guy that you saw maybe 5 years ago that's still playing college football. And I was with an administrator last night, and he was telling me that there's a movement now where the junior college route, where it used to be 2+2, you know, when you go to a four-year institution, they're talking about 2+4. So a guy can be there for 6-7 years compared to the guy who, you know, we would thought if we get through four, that would be enough. But now guys are graduating at the age of 26 and 27 because they have all this extra time to play. Is that good or bad for the game?
Well, I don't know that it's bad. I mean, look at a guy like Roger Staubach, who went to the Navy and spent 4 years. So he didn't come into the league until he was, I think, 25 or 26. Mm-hmm. So is he penalized as a result of that? No, I don't think so. And it's more of an anomaly, I think, than it is the rule with a lot of guys. I mean, case in point, if I'm not mistaken, one of the running backs for South Carolina, Rasul Faison, I think this is his 7th year in college football. I mean, that's a full NFL career. 7 years was my NFL career, okay? You know what I'm saying? So,
you know, it's not that I don't know guys that they were graduating at 25 and 26. They just weren't playing football. They were just there students.
And there's a guy that's at Arkansas. I believe it's on the roster, at least during the spring. He's 30. So, you know, God bless them. If their journey took them elsewhere, they've always had this dream of playing college football, and they get that opportunity, yeah, who am I to judge? Good luck to them.
Yeah, I would say the same thing. It's amazing where your teammate, the incoming freshman, might end up babysitting your kids, and you're in the same position room with them.
We had a guy at Mizzou that came in under Coach Powers, and I think he and his brother both had military service, and they were, you know, well into their early 20s, maybe mid 20s. So we called him Old Man One and Old Man Two. I mean, but they were great teammates. You know, one played a lot of football for us, the other one not so much. But you know, it was great to tease those guys. But you know, ultimately they were living out their dream of playing football.
Howard, this weekend, tomorrow, this is a big game, obviously, as we've mentioned. SEC play opens up, and Klaib was talking about the blood donor games. Like, that's all over, and this is conference play football, and expecting a huge crowd tomorrow. The atmosphere in that building must be off the charts, especially after the last couple seasons.
It is the best that I have seen in the 15 years that I've been here. The new construction on the north end zone, which is not yet complete, it'll be completed prior to the 2026 season, next season. Somehow it seems to trap in the noise, and it makes Froh Field very, very loud. Even with only 57,000 capacity due to the construction, you know, they've taken out probably, I don't know, 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 seats, but it somehow is louder. Now, that may be because of the enhanced sound system, but the point is, Froh Field, because of its fans and the success of Mizzou, the complexion of that stadium has changed, you know, over the last couple of years. Obviously, winning makes a difference, but the fans are, to me, far more engaged and energetic, and I, you know, trust me, the players feed off of the energy of the fans.
Hey, Howard, before we get out of here, I would be remiss not to say congratulations to Brady Cook, who's going to be elevated to the roster, the active roster for the New York Jets this weekend, because mm-hmm. their quarterback, their starter, is going to be down. That's quite an accomplishment for a young man who just a few years ago was walking on in Missouri and playing there and had an incredible career there. Now to see him take that next step, man, and you saw it all as a player when he was at Mizzou. What does that mean to you to watch a kid like that have that chance to step on the NFL field?
Yeah, and to add to what you just mentioned, Mike, you know, Brady Cook at times was booed at Mizzou, yeah, which to me was just, you know, unfathomable. He won a ton of games, 23, 24 games or something as the Mizzou starter. So he deserved better. But I'm really happy for him. Went undrafted. He's paid his dues. He's a kid that works very hard, very cerebral, committed to the game, committed to getting better, committed to being strong physically. And listen, it only takes one team to find the right opportunity. And, you know, maybe the Jets will be that opportunity for Brady. I mean, the fact that he's going to be elevated to the active roster, you know what that means? He's a snap or an injury away from being on the field playing in the NFL. And that's tremendous for this young man who I think deserves that opportunity.
Howard, enjoy the game tomorrow. Happy conference opening day. And it should be a lot of fun at Roe Field tomorrow.
Yeah, it should be very electric. And I don't know that this could be a better way to start conference play than against the folks from Columbia East, South Carolina Gamecocks.
Thank you, Howard.
Thanks, guys.
Howard Richards, Mizzou football analyst. Tomorrow, the kickoff against South Carolina at 6. And then at 6:30, the Fighting Illini in Indiana to take on the Hoosiers. Top 10 team in Illinois, number 19 Indiana. That will be a really fun day of college football tomorrow. Klabes, great to talk to you. We'll do it again next Friday. Oh, live at
Can't
Lowe's.
Wait.
Live at Lowe's tonight. You with all the broadcasters after the postgame show at the Bullock across the street from the ballpark.
We'll have some. We'll pontificate and give you some insightful thoughts on the season.
Do it. Looking forward to it, man. Have a great weekend. Talk to you soon. That is Mike Claiborne. I'm Chris Ranji. If you missed the Gas House Gang, you know where to find it. Twitter, YouTube, Facebook, or on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. The Dave Glover Show is next on KMOX.